All right, here we are. This is the latest episode of Leading the Lead Way. I am your host, T.T. Sterninzi. I'm looking forward to yet another conversation where, as part of this special offshoot of the Critical Reflections podcast that I set up, I get the great pleasure to have the chance to sit down and talk with some of my colleagues at LAD who I may not necessarily know all that well, but it gives me a chance to get to know them and it gives you a chance to get to know them as well. And we hopefully do it in a fun and engaging way. So on that note, I am going to get ready to turn things over to today's guest, Blair Witt. As I've done with all of these episodes so far, I will have Blair introduce herself to all of us, and then we will dive right into what I'm assuming is going to be a very spirited conversation, which I cannot wait for. So I am about to turn things over right now to Blair. Please feel free to introduce yourself in any way that you would like.
Cool. All right. Hi, good afternoon. I am Blair Witt. I am a DSP at lead DSP at LAD. I've been with LAD, it'll be 8 years this year. I've been in the DDS field for 14 years this year. I started out at VNV, which is the Art Studio for Adults with Disabilities, and that's how I got to know about LAD, and also how I met some people that we serve who used to go and still do attend Visionaries and Voices. That's kind of where I got my start and how I met them. So I'm at Timberlane House, which is out in Madera. There are four ladies in my house, Annie Callen, Jenny Crow, Saren Hoffman, Ashley Miller. Three of them, I met at VNV, so I already knew them. And then when I left there, I needed a job. And then I decided, you know what? I like LAD. I like what they're about. You know, they same vibe, same mission, so to speak, in that field. So I applied, met Phyllis Thomas, got hired by her, and started at Timberlane in July of 2014, as a matter of fact. And so I love LAD. I love their mission. I love the camaraderie. You know, even though I'm at a house offsite from the main campus, always felt connected, you know, with everybody. And I think because we used to have, you know, meetings and fun things going on over at Victory Parkway. So, you know, when COVID, of course, hit, and then all of that stuff kind of went by the wayside. So, you know, kind of lost contact with people and stuff, you know, I mean, it's not the same over Zoom, unfortunately. I mean, it's still nice to see people's faces, mind you, but it's not the same vibe, you know, because you're not there face-to-face, physical contact, talking to people, you know, hugging people, seeing people, you know, that type. So, you know, it's a little bit different now. A little bit different. I'm not real happy about, but what do you do? Right?
That's right. You make do with what you got. That's right. Mm-hmm. All right. So, you know, and I can already tell this is going to be a really special conversation that we're going to have. And again, I'm going to make sure that we dive into obviously the LAD specific portion of what you're doing and your career. But I'm also really intrigued by, again, your earlier time at VNV. So if you could give me a little background on how you got connected with them and what you were doing with them in particular before you started at LAD.
Okay. So I used to be a business. I've been in retail for basically 25 years. I was at Swallens for probably 10 of those years. And then after I left, when Swallens closed down, two friends and I started a baby furniture business, USA Baby. It's a franchise based out of Chicago. And so we started that together and I did that for 12 years, you know, so it was a good intro into dealing with people, all kinds of people, you know, being able to talk to folks, being able, you know, whether it be a cultural thing, whether it be, you know, male, female, gender thing, you know, it was just, it just gave me a good basis to talk to folks and learn how to get along with people, how to interact with people, how to vibe with people, you know, and also it helped teach me how to handle situations, you know, whether it be a bad situation, you know, something going on. But while I was, I had that store, I had an encounter with a lady who had a son that had autism. And, you know, you come in the door, bell rings, ding, 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 let people know you're there. So she walked in, and then he walked in, and then the bell dang was dinging, and so he was frozen because it scared him. Number one, he didn't like the sound, so he's standing there holding his ears, you know, and so she's like, "Come in, come in," and it'll stop. So, you know, it was just good to see how she handled him in the situation. Other people in the store were like a little rattled by it. One lady who was a teacher was like, you know, you shouldn't let him act like that. You know, you should just make him. And she was like, or you just leave him at home. And she was like, no. She's like, I don't have time to sit at home. She's like, he's got to learn how to interact with the world, and the world has to know how to interact with him. And she's like, and it's my job to teach him. We can't do that sitting at home. So she's like, yes, he has to do that. And yes, I'm going to show him how to do it. And I was like, you know what? I was like, he's fine. I said, he's not bothering anybody. He's not disrupting anything. His mom is teaching him a life lesson right now. And that's very important, you know? So anyway, that kind of piqued my interest a little bit there. Because I never really had any real dealings with anybody with disabilities, tell you the truth. You know, I'm 61 years old. We didn't interact in school and stuff with people with developmental disabilities. It just didn't happen. That's just the way it was at that time period. Whereas, you know, my children grew up in with school and went to school with people who had developmental disabilities. So for them, it's like a no-brainer.
Right.
So, you know, so anyhow, long story short, we had to close our business due to the recession of 2007, right?
Okay.
We're small, independent, you know, it was hard for us to compete with the internet, hard for us to compete with big box people. So we closed our business. That was end of 2007, 2008, here I am, you know, used to being up, moving, doing all the time. Once I got tired of sitting around my house, you know, I was like, okay, I need something to do. I also I had to like rethink, do I want to go back into retail or is it time for a change? In comes a friend of mine who at the time was a volunteer at Visionaries and Voices. And she's like, oh, you should come down and visit and volunteer. They were over at the Essex studio at the time. And I was like, ooh, no. I said, I don't know anything about that. Number one, I don't know anything about art. Okay. I don't know anything about that. I said, I know what I like and know what I don't like. I said, I go to the museum, art museums and things, right? But I don't know anything about art. So she's like, no, no, you know, no worries. Just come down and try it out. So I go, you know, I volunteer. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. You know, okay, this is all right. And then, you know, I felt a little awkward with the people because, like I said, I'd never really interacted with people with disabilities before. So at first I was a little awkward, you know, wanting to do everything for them, take care of them, you know, that caregiver thing. And then and she was like, yeah, no, that's not what we do. That, you know, no, don't do that. You know, they are just like you. You treat them just like you. You talk to them just like you and anybody else, you know, don't have that mentality, so to speak, right?
Right. And
I was like, oh, I was like, okay, well, all right. You know, so I did. I sat down and I started talking to people, you know, and I was like, okay, this is cool. She's right. Just like you and me, do whatever we do. Same type of conversation, you know, okay, got it, got it. So they moved, they separated studios, moved one out to Tri-County, one on Spring Grove. Went to the one on Spring Grove, offered a position there, took the position. So I was technically a studio coordinator. We helped everybody like with their actual artwork because it's a working art studio, right?
Okay.
So, you know, they had to do their pieces, get them to prepared and ready for like to be juried, like a jury, like when we had juried shows.
Right. So, you know,
had to learn how to do finished product, learn how to, you know, take no for an answer. Technically, you know, what pretty good, but it's just not quite good enough to put in this show. You know, next time you need to do X, Y, and Z to make sure that it looks more professional. Right. So, you know, those are the things that we did. And then I learned that, okay, so we had art shows out in the community, you know, Cincinnati Art Museum, you know, different galleries around the city. What was it? At the time it was, still second Sunday on Main.
On Main, right.
So, and we would do those things as well. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. Who knew, right? And I learned a lot. I learned a lot from BMV. And I was like, you know, really happy about that. And that's where I met, like I said, Sarah, Jenny, and Annie was there. And so that's where I met them at. And that's where I met Phyllis, who is the house manager here. and got to know them and the staff that worked here as well. Some people I already knew and some people I didn't. So, you know, then when I left V&V, because I was going to school, and then once that was over with, I needed a job. So applied to Lab because I already knew something about them. I would come to Victory Parkway grounds and pick people up from there. Okay. And also like out here at Timberlane House and other places, and then take them to V&V. So that was also one of my jobs. I was a van driver for them. So I got to know people already that were that Lab served, so to speak. So you know, that was a no-brainer then in that case. And then I came to Timberlane House and I've been here ever since.
All right. Wow. This again, I'm sitting here and my head is spinning. I'm learning all this stuff. And it's really fascinating to me because I feel like you and your experience in a lot of ways kind of encapsulates a little bit of what I'm trying to do as a LAD employee. Again, in my particular case, I'm not working directly with people with disabilities, but I have in the past.
Okay.
Before I lived here and moved to Cincinnati, when I was in Philly, right after I graduated from college, I worked as an employment training specialist back in the early 90s. So it was right at the beginning of the, you know, the ADA. I had a business degree. So really what the pitch that I made to the organization that I started working for at the time was, okay, hey, I have this business background. I would know how to be able to go into a business and speak their language. And then be able to say, okay, yeah, I can help you in that. I can help train this person that we'll be bringing in, getting them acclimated to the job site. You don't have to pay me at all. Again, you know, the agency, the federal government is covering all of that. So you're going to get basically two employees for the price of one for a while as I figure out how to get this person up to speed and be able to handle things independently on their own. And it was a great kind of combination. But for me, my outside life outside of work was all about watching movies and writing. So when I moved here, that's when I kind of shifted my focus. And I've been here 22 years now, but I shifted from dealing with social service and nonprofit world in that way to becoming a film critic and doing some writing and doing all this other stuff. And now
what you always wanted to do was to do film and be a critic and stuff.
You know, that's a good question. I don't know that I always wanted to do that. It was always something I was interested in. And I think in large part, it was kind of like, I didn't know any critics or any writers at the time. So I was just reading other people's work. I was watching a lot of films, doing all that kind of stuff. And it was kind of like, well, yeah, I get this and I love this, but I had no idea that was a, you know, that was a job that someone could do and they were getting paid to do this really crazy fun thing of being able to sit in a movie theater and watch movies and then talk about it afterward. I didn't know that at all.
Did you have that writer's spirit though? Like you like to write?
I did.
Love that.
I always did. I can trace that back to, again, the movie stuff. I can literally trace back to my mother when I was a small kid in the early 70s, you know, my mom was into music and movies and all. And I remember as a kid, she had the, you know, the LPs of like Coffee and, you know, the Pam Grier films. And I would look at those LPs and I'm like, oh my God, like, that's really cool. And I was too young to see those movies. But by the time I was, you know, as I got a little older and got into school and was doing well, my mom, it's kind of like, okay, you know, she worked nights, worked at a hospital, but when she would get off and have time to pick me up from school, if, you know, good report card or whatever it was, she's like, well, what do you want to do? And I was always like, I want to go to movies.
Let's go to the movies, right?
So we did that. So that was, you know, she started me on that path. I ended up hooking up with friends and, you know, middle school and junior high who were all into the same things. It was at the beginning of the cable phase. So I had buddies who had HBO and all that. And we would sit in basements and watch movies and like earn money just so that we could go to the movie theater. It was a lot cheaper back then to go to the theater. So I was always watching that stuff. Okay. And by the time I got older and got into high school, I hung out with, you know, a bunch of guys who liked to write. So we would, you know, we were doing writing assignments in class that were kind of the traditional boring stuff that you do. But then outside, you know, I remember, you know, my last 2 years, I went to a prep school in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And
a prep school? Oh, what?
Yeah, it was a little, it was a strange, well, it wasn't strange. It was a great experience. I love the school.
So what age was that you went to this prep school?
Those last 2 years, it was, I was, you know, 16, 17 years old. Okay. I graduated from high school there in 87. But while I was there, you know, I had a couple of buddies who had computers in their rooms, you know, and we could, after we had our set study hall, we would get together and we would write stories together, like do these, you know, there were like maybe five or six of us, and we would write these round robin stories where we would, everybody would get like a page or a half hour's worth of time, and you'd write your portion of the story, the next person would come in, only read the portion before them.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was doing that kind of stuff.
Okay, always. Well, background in movie stuff like that then. I mean, you know, maybe not a formal background, but still.
Right. Yeah. So it was
that.
It was definitely there. And by the time I got to college, I had the chance to kind of bring them all together, because I took, even though I have a business degree, I took a bunch of English classes and communications classes where we studied film as text.
Okay.
Which meant I got, like, I had a semester where I got to watch the films of Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh,
and
nice.
So I saw all these Hitchcock films. I got to write about them, you know, films from the 70s, you know, The Conversation and Taxi Driver and all of this really great, cool, fun stuff.
Spirit stuff before already.
Yeah. So
you kind of had a background in it before you even got into this, though.
Right. So, yeah, I had it there. I was going to film festivals once I graduated from college and living and working. You know, Philadelphia had a great festival. I would go every year. I was one of those people. I would like buy a pass so I could see 10, 12, 15 films. And wow. I'd make it an evening. You know, if I wasn't dating someone, I would go take myself out to dinner and like go to the movies. Yeah, I wanted it to be an experience. So I always, film has always been that kind of thing for me.
Okay. So my mom wasn't a big movie buff or anything, but my aunt loved like musicals and stuff. Right. So she did all those South Pacific, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Yeah. What was the one, the Calamity Jane one movie with Doris Day, where she does all the singing? You know, I mean, we would watch, take Saturdays when I was at home with her, and like, you know, we would like watch those type of movies, right? She loved Charlie Chan and like John Wayne and, all of the old movies, you know what I mean? Abbott and Costello movies, those type of things. Those are the things that we watched, that I would watch with her, you know, as far as movies stuff were concerned. But and then, you know, as I got older, we were like, you know, we could walk from our house to the movie theater down in Pleasant Ridge. I grew up in Silverton, so you know, we would walk down the street all the way down Montgomery Road to, you know, the theater there, and then we would see, like, you know, all the Bruce Lee movies and stuff right, you know. And then you couldn't see anything else because you weren't old enough, so you know, you kind of what you got to see at the movie theater anyway. But I remember, you know, like seeing, I saw Mary Poppins at the movie over at the 20th Century, you know?
Oh, okay.
And I also saw The Sound of Music over there at the 20th Century. I mean, you know, And then going to drive-ins like that, of course, you know, which is always my favorite thing to do, because look at here, we got to sit on top of the car and watch the movies at the drive-in, which was awesome with all the snacks and stuff, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
that was a fun thing. But that's kind of like, you know, that's my movie. But normally I just don't sit around and watch a whole lot of those, honestly.
Yeah you know, before we started this conversation, you told me a little bit about that, and I was like, yeah, we're gonna talk about that. So I guess this is the time to talk about that. Amazing to me that you have those kinds of foundational movie experiences, that growing up and loving it in that way, and yet now you're not as interested in it.
No.
When did it kind of like flip the switch off?
And not that I flipped it off. I think it was that when I owned my own business, you know, that I work so much. I had a husband and two children, and, you know, the extent of that was watching Disney movies. I mean, you know what I mean? Right. I can't tell you how many times I watched The Little Mermaid and Pooh's Grand Adventure and Oliver and Company and the, you know, on and on and on and on and on with all the Disney movies. And we still have them on VHS, I will tell you.
Oh, yeah.
My children love to go back and see those and be like, oh, look at our childhood. Mom, you remember when we used to sit and watch so-and-so? You remember when we used to, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, I remember. I remember watching all those dang blasted cartoons all the time. You're right. And the bad thing is that don't let one come on TV now, because I will stop what I am doing and sit down and watch Tarzan, right?
Okay.
I will stop what I'm doing and sit down and watch The Lion King, you know what I mean? I was sitting and watching those type of things, but we also watch stuff like Harriet the Spy and Matilda and, you know, Free Willy and all those kid type. So, you know, at one point it's just like, I don't got time to watch an adult movie because I'm watching so many children's movies. How am I supposed to watch an adult movie and then work, you know, like 6 days a week at my business as well?
Right. Yeah.
My husband and I just kind of got out of going to the movies and stuff because really, who had the time?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was just like, who had the time? Not to mention the fact he was tired. I was just tired too. With, you know, the business and the children and the whole nine yards. And so it was just, yeah, it was just a lot. So I kind of got out of it, I think, right around in that period.
So okay. And you know, it's funny. I hear you say that, and it reminds me of how different life as a film critic is, because I got married, and I have two stepkids who were 4 and 7 when we got married. So my kids grew up knowing what I did for a living. You know, and I would go out, usually for me, working as a critic meant I would go out to press screenings or word of mouth screenings at night.
Okay.
So that I could see them and then be able to write about them, whether it was, you know, write about them from City Beat or getting ready to cover them on Fox 19 on Friday mornings. And I would have those experiences, but my kids, you know, I was seeing stuff that it was too late because they had to go to bed to get ready for school or whatever, or it wasn't appropriate for them at the time. But they would always come up to me first thing in the morning. They'd be like, well, what did you see and what are you going to grade it? And I remember when they were younger, I always hated those conversations because I was like, you know what, the grade doesn't matter. I mean, it's the thing that they would think about. Ooh, you know, TT liked it because he gave it a good grade, or he didn't like it, so he gave it a bad grade. But in my head, I was always like, I can't wait until we can have a real conversation about these things. So I remember the first time that my oldest, you know, I remember dropping them off with a couple of friends down at Newport on the Levee, you know, early teenage years, 13, 14 years old, maybe. And they get out of the movie and my kid sits in the front seat with me of the car instead of sitting in the back, hanging out with their friends and all that kind of stuff, sat up in the front seat with me and was like, okay, we just saw something that I know you saw and you've already like written about, but I want to know what you thought about this. And yeah, I was like, okay, here we are. This is it. Like, we're going to have this conversation. And it was the most amazing experience because it was like, yeah, you know, 13 years old, but I felt like for the first time I'm talking to maybe not an adult, but I'm talking to somebody who's ready to have this conversation.
Right. Who's going to have a different perspective maybe than what you have, right?
Yeah. And it did. It completely opened things up.
Why do you have that perspective? Why do you think that about this particular film? You know, and so you can really get into the meat of it, right?
Yeah. And it was beautiful. And it was the start, you know, with the oldest, but then when the younger one got the same deal, we were able to do that together. And it changed. And, you know, of course I still had to see everything, but I loved the idea that, you know, again, we got through those early Disney films that you were talking about that. Yes. As a parent, you have to watch all those kinds of things, or the TV shows that you're watching with your kids.
Right? Oh, my goodness, the Wild Thornberries.
Oh my goodness.
SpongeBob was one, you know, those.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. I love the Wild Thornberries. So I think that cartoon was so freaking awesome. It was like one of my favorites, right?
Yeah. I was a Hey Arnold guy.
Oh, we did that one too, though.
Yes. Yeah.
We loved Hey Arnold too. We watched that one as well. And then they got into Harry Potter, of course, you know. And
honestly,
to this day, whenever they come over to the house and there's a Harry Potter movie on, we have to watch it. There's hands down, no matter what else is on the TV, you know, and I get up and go back and forth to them. And they're like, Mom, sit down. You know, Mom, you're missing it. I'm like, but we've watched this movie how many times? And then, of course, one child read the books, one child didn't. They listened to them on audio as well. My husband does the same thing. They want to know why, where I am from, what planet have I come from that I don't get into Harry Potter like they do, right? I am like the outside person here. They're like, oh, you watched them. Have you read the books? No, I haven't read the books. You listen on audio? Because, you know, you get a different perspective. You listen on audio. I'm saying, no, I haven't really listened to it on audio either. So, okay. So I'm like the odd man out, right? And they're all back and forth talking because they've read the books and stuff. And they know all the other stuff that has gone on that is not included in the films, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, where did that come from? What? Are you kidding? No, wait a minute. I didn't see that. That's not in the film. And they're like, that's because you haven't read the books. That's why, because you don't know, Mom. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. You know, this is hilarious because Harry Potter wasn't the thing for us. Mm-hmm. It was my oldest, and it was the Twilight books and the movies.
Oh,
when Twilight hit, my oldest was just at that age. I remember going to see the first film and coming home, and they were like, okay, I want to go see the movie or I want to read the books. And I was like, well, I'm going to go buy the book. And I usually don't do the, you know, because again, I spend so much time watching movies, I don't usually have enough time to go back and read books and, you know, kind of do that comparison. But I was like, okay, for you. And because we're at this stage where we're connecting over all this stuff that I do and that I care about, I was like, okay, I'll buy the book and I'll read it. And if I feel that it's appropriate, I'll pass it on to you. And I was like, I've already seen the movie, so I'll take you to go see the movie. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and we'll do this together. This is just something just for the two of us that we'll do, and we'll have this experience together. And it was like perfect, except for the idea that I hated all of these books. I would read them in like a day and a half because you just fly through it. And it was just like, it wasn't great writing. I wasn't, it was like, whatever. But I was like, you know what? I'm doing this.
Good. They're mean. Yeah. And my kids love Twilight. And honestly, I read the books as well. And we watched the movies together and all that fun stuff too, you know? And, you know, they're like, that's B acting. That's C acting. That's terrible acting. That person, where did they get that person from? They're horrible. You know, they're just like, rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, okay, this is good because they picked, even though we watched them, they picked those movies apart. When I tell you pick them apart, like nothing left but the bones, Brent, throw them out, that's what it was. But let me tell you something, to this very day still though, let a Twilight movie come on and we sit down and we watch Twilight movies. I mean, you know.
See, that's funny. I didn't have quite that experience though. my oldest was just in love with the whole world, the whole deal. And it was kind of like, you know, we were reading the books, it's kind of like, the writing's not great, but I still just love the story and I love all this. And I was like, okay, that's fine. You can have that love if you want, as long as you do understand that, okay, yeah, it's not really great writing. So I was, you know, we were kind of going through all this, and then all of a sudden we got to the very last book. Mm-hmm. And I read, again, like all the others, I read the last book really quickly. I tossed it over and I was like, okay, here it is. You can read it.
Yeah.
My oldest got about halfway through it and then was just like, just came to me and gave me the book back and was like, okay, this is really trash. And I was like, I looked and I was like, what do you mean? And it's like, this is trash. I'm not going to finish it. And I was like, oh, no.
You need to finish that
because we're doing this together. You got to finish it. And they were like, I don't know that I need to do that. But that would be a waste of my time. And I was like, but what about the time that I wasted reading and watching all this stuff?
Sorry about that. But anyway.
Yeah. So like I said, it was, we got to that, but I totally respected, you know, the idea that they were like, okay, this is just not good anymore. I don't need to invest any more time in this. And it was funny because they were basically kind of like, well, you had to do it anyway because you had to talk about it and write about it. And they were like, I don't have to do that. It's just not working for me, so I can step away from it. And it's like, Wait, on one hand, I understand and respect your independence and the ability to kind of move on from this, but I was still kind of hurt. Like, you made me go through all this, and like, why don't you finish it?
They're like, yeah, no, you know, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know where my head was at the time. But you know what? I have grown and matured now. And look at here. That is not for me.
Like I said, it was a beautiful moment to have that exchange and to really go through it. And again, like I said, every once in a while, when we all get together, I still bring that up. Like, you know, you still made me read all those books. I'm not forgetting that. But it was
for your children.
It was the way, again, it was one of those ways that, like I said, as a critic, it opened a door for an engagement with them that I kind of, in some ways, you know, I had that experience with my mom, and I was glad to, again, be able to do the same kind of thing with my kids. And I hope that in turn, they're going to do the same thing when they have kids too. They'll be able to say, you know what, yeah, these are some things I want to share that I'm going to remember that, you know, my parents did with me, and we keep that going. So that's the beauty of, you know, kind of what I do. And again, and to a certain extent, and I haven't thought about this in this direct kind of way before, but this is also part of what I want and hope to achieve with the film festival too.
Okay.
I'm hoping to set up opportunities where we bring these films in. And, you know, if like this past year, we were able to bring in filmmakers who will talk to audiences or, you know, will be at parties and people will be able to come up to them and say, hey, I saw your film. I want to talk to you about this. Or maybe they're coming to the screenings with their families and they'll have their kids there and their kids will be like, oh, you're the director and I just saw your film, or, oh, you're an actor. And again, those family units and groups of people can have those kinds of exchanges with people who actually make movies. Because again, I go back to what I said initially, like growing up, yeah, I had this foundation and this interest and love of film and writing and all that, but I didn't know anyone who worked in that field.
In that field, yeah.
Yeah, but now, like I said, there's an opportunity for us to bring people in.
Meet those people though too, I have to say, because you know what, I am grateful for the film festival because for those exact reasons, get to meet people, get to meet the actors, get to meet the directors, get to meet the people behind the scenes, right? And also just being able to see so many different types of films that I probably wouldn't have if I was on my own, just go and see, right?
Right.
But having that opportunity through LAD and the film festival to be able to do that has been just like the best experience for me, I have to say. You know, just because, like I said, I've gotten to see different films that I probably would have never, if they were just at the theater, never gone to see, probably.
Right.
Just probably wouldn't have taken the time to do that. Right.
Yeah. Like I said, that's what I hope we are able to achieve. And, you know, and it's a great kind of thought process for me right now, because literally, you know, this conversation that we're engaged in right now is coming in between two screenings that I'm doing for the Sundance Virtual Film Festival, where I'm using this to scout some films that we might want to bring in this year. Okay. And obviously, as part of our festival, disability is such a strong component of what we're trying to do and the stories we're trying to bring in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a Black man growing up, you know, I'm thinking as we're having this conversation now, and for instance, knowing that we just lost Sidney Poitier, I'm like, okay, you know, he was one of those seminal figures for me to see on the big screen and be like, okay, he, not only does he look like me, but it was like, I want to be like him.
I want to be like him because he was
suave.
I mean, just, you know, seemed like he never got rattled. Nothing really rattled him. You know, the way he carried himself on film, on just like, you know, outside the film industry and everything, was just like, ooh, wow. Man, look at him. He's awesome.
Yeah. And that's one of those things that I have carried, you know, all throughout like my watching time. And again, even as a critic now and having the chance to interview and to talk to people that are, you know, making films and doing all this stuff, it's great. But I'm hoping that, like I said, again, as part of the festival, I want to find people within the disability community who are out there telling their stories, or performers who are in roles that we don't traditionally get to see them in, and we can bring them here to the festival. They can share their stories, and then someone else here can look at them just like I looked at Sydney and be like, that's like, who I want to be like.
I can do that. I can aspire to be that right there, which I really like the idea of there's, even though they're, it's still limited, but the amount of the people that are being portrayed on like television and stuff anymore too. Mm-hmm. But that, like, I watched that show, The Good Doctor. And have you seen that one?
I've seen a couple of episodes of it. Yeah.
And I think, okay, because you know what? Yeah. Just because someone has a disability, a certain something, doesn't mean that they are not, you know, capable, right? Mm-hmm. I think society sees them as not capable of doing anything, right? Besides seeing it somewhere, you know? So I'm happy there are more of those role models on mainstream TV, so to speak, because not everybody has this show and that type of stuff. And yeah, they're limited roles, I have to say, but you know, the fact that they're there now.
Right.
Everybody to see, I think is a good thing. And I have a friend who works for the state, and that's what she does. She makes sure, she goes around to employers and stuff, and she makes sure and she sets up like job fairs and stuff so that people with disabilities can make a living wage and not just work at some, you know, piecemeal or whatever the case may be. And for her, she had no idea what to expect in this community. She had never really been in this community before, you know, but she has taken to it, I must say, like a duck to water. And when I tell you that girl is about her job, goes to 33 different counties, traveling around, setting up job fairs and, you know, getting employers talking to them, doing trainings for them and their employees, that type of thing. You know, it really is just an amazing thing, because until you get into the field, you don't really know anything about it. You just don't have a clue as to what people are capable of, right? People are so capable, and no one really knows that until they really get into this field and start to delve deep into it. On the outside, on the surface, it may not seem that way, right? But once you get into the field, then you kind of, you see that. And so, you know, with you bringing the movies and everything in, and for our folks to be able to see that, you know, that's something to aspire to. You want to be an actor or actress? Guess what? You can do that.
Right.
You can do that. And for them to be able to see those people, right? Meet those people. Right? Mm-hmm. See them up on the stage talking about their lives and what they've gone through and how they got to where they are right now. You know, because I think that's also something that people need to see. It doesn't just happen magically, right?
Right, right.
It takes some work, right? Mm-hmm. It takes some knocking on doors, even kicking down some doors.
Yes. You know,
to even get to that point. So, you know, I think it's awesome that the film festival can bring that, you know, to people and for everybody to be able to see that. And what can be, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting and true as well that, you know, when I brought up Sydney Poitier, I initially went back to being, you know, a teenager or however old I was the first time I saw him on screen and being drawn to him in that way. And you start off with the idea of those role models, but I think we also kind of forget about the whole process and how that aspirational kind of drive changes from finding a role model that you look at and say, ooh, I want to be like them, to at some point after you've seen someone and you've had a conversation with them, maybe at a festival or whatever it is, then, you know, maybe you figure out a way to reconnect with them or to keep that contact going. And they move from being a role model to a mentor.
Exactly.
And it's that mentorship role and the opportunity that exists that's really exciting too. And that's one of the things I really kind of love as a writer and a film critic, because, you know, I don't think a lot of people are sitting around like, you know, with aspirations of, ooh, here's my favorite film critic necessarily, or my favorite writer in that way. Mm-hmm. But the idea that I'm here and doing this job And, you know, people can still see me on TV talking about film or whatever else, but then they can also come up to me and kind of be like, hey,
yeah,
let's have a conversation. That means I'm not on that pedestal anymore. I'm somebody that you can like come up to, we can talk, we can have coffee, we can share ideas and experiences and our perspectives on that. And then they can look at me and sort of say, all right,
that's cool. Do that.
I recognize this. I could do this, and maybe this person could help me
do that.
Figure out how to do that.
Right.
So that's what I want the festival to be able to do. I want the festival to hit that stage at some point where it's kind of like, oh yeah, you know, you leave the aspirational stuff and you transition into this. Okay, how can I find someone that can help me figure this thing out?
Yes.
To help me do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think in some ways you've already done that, which is really so exciting. Again, with your time at Visionaries and Voices, you got to do that for people. And, you know, when I heard you talk about the idea of working with someone and being able to say, yeah, we're going to try to get your pieces ready for exhibition, and maybe it's not ready yet, but here's some things that you can do to get ready for it.
Right.
Those are the kinds of conversations I have with, you know, young writers or young filmmakers or whatever else. And I can say, hey, yeah, your film is good. It's a great idea. But here's what you can do to make it better.
You know, and that's what we do here now, even with the ladies. They attend the Madeira Art Festival. It's in May, the first weekend in May, you know. And so they work on their artwork here at the house. They used to go over to Essex. And then their art teacher kind of got sick and couldn't do it anymore. But they still work on their art here. Jenny still goes to Visionaries and Voices, you know, so she's still in different shows that they do throughout the city. And also some of her work has gone outside of the city as well, like New York, and also over to England. So, which is a good thing, you know, to let people know that guess what? Outsider art is really a thing, you know, and it's good business too. People are selling things. So they go to the Madeira, or they make their art for the Madeira Art Festival. And then, you know, we do the same thing here. Ooh, look at these corners, look at these edges, look at how this is framed. You know, do you really think that someone is going to want to purchase that and actually give you money for it? Or do you think you need to take that back and, you know, you might need to tweak it a little bit. You might need to, you know, paint these edges and make it go all the way around. Do you think you're going to need a different frame? What do you think it'd be if it was matted versus not matted, you know? Is that going to get a professional look, a more polished look, right? So, you know, we still do those things for the ladies here. And, you know, they do very well at the Madeira Art Fair, I have to say, because they're down there with other people who are selling art, whether it be paintings, drawings, jewelry, you know, what else was I going to say? I forget, but anyhow. But, you know, the point is that they're there with true artisans as well, just like they are, you
right.
know? They have to sell their stuff. You know, you have to, when someone walks into your booth, you have to chat them up, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell them where your process, right? Well, how did you come up with this piece? You know, where did that come from in your mind? And then you have to be able to tell them all that, because you know what? Once they can connect with you as a person, then, you know, it's like, oh, okay. Because we, you know, it's like, wow. Okay, I got that. That's cool. I think I'm gonna go ahead and purchase that piece because now they've made a connection with you.
Right.
I think movies can do that same thing, right? You have to be able to connect with people. You have to be able to touch them in some way, right? In order for them to want to see that movie or read that book or, you know, buy that piece of art, whatever the case may be, you know, because a lot of it is subjective.
Yeah.
A lot of it is subjective.
I'm shocked and surprised and so happy. This was, again, just the perfect conversation to have. And it's actually the perfect summation for us for this fourth and final episode, I guess, of this mini season of Leading the Lad Way.
Okay.
This is exactly where we needed to go. And, you know, it's happenstance and kind of luck that you were the last person that I got in touch with for this. But this, seriously, this conversation has been fantastic. And I got to tell you though, at some point we're going to need to do a follow-up on this one because there's so much more, again, I can tell from your experiences that I would love to hear about. And again, I guarantee that listeners would want to hear about too, but I want to thank you for taking the time with me today to kick things off. I feel like I just made a new friend out of all this too. I mean, we're colleagues at work, but again, this was a great, great conversation. So again,
thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. I wasn't so sure, honestly, but you know what? It's been good. And I am so happy to connect with you and actually be able to talk to you and get to know you a little bit better too. You know, I mean, that's cool. It's a good thing. I see you. I know what you do, you know, but to really like kind of get into a good conversation is something, you know, that just hasn't happened. So I'm glad this has happened and that we were able to do that. So thank you so much for your time. Right. I do appreciate it.
So as I'm thanking you and you're thanking me, we got this great love fest going on. Let me just extend the love fest to the entire group of listeners that are out there that have been tuning in to Leading the Lad Way or to the Critical Reflections podcast as a whole. You know, again, this conversation that we just took part in and that people were listening to, this is part and parcel of what I wanted these conversations to be like and about. So if you enjoyed this one, you had the opportunity to check out some of the others, I will let you know we are already in negotiations to create another second season, if you will, of Leading the Lad Way. There will be some more details about that coming out very soon. So stay tuned. And again, I'm extending my thanks to Blair, my guest, to the listeners out there, to everyone. And just to say, you know, enjoy the time. And until we get together again, thank you very much.